It's 5 o'clock on your Tuesday night. This is Tucson Roadrunners Happy Hour from Fox Sports 1450 AM with David Maradian and Patrick Moore. It's our usual Tuesday night get-together right here on Tucson Sports Station, Fox Sports 1450 AM.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Happy Hour on Fox Sports 1450. David Maradian joined by Patrick Moore. We've got so much to get to, including a key victory for the Roadrunners, their second game against Ontario that keeps them right in the mix with a struggling San Diego team, plus the Arizona Wildcats men's basketball team, who I've been covering the last few weeks, has continued to win, and that's always a good thing in March. They're off to Indianapolis for the Final Four. First game on Saturday. Should they beat Michigan, the national championship would be on Monday. So it's exciting times in the city of Tucson. It's exciting times really for sports fans in general. This is such a busy stretch of the season. So what's been on your mind, Patrick? What have you been watching and how's everything going?
Well, David, I'm just, you know, kind of jealous of you that you've been able to watch this historic run of U of A basketball. I mean, the call you sent us to the group chat was just electric. I mean, just you kept it short and sweet and it was great. But no, it's been good to as I said last week, the best time of sports is upon us. Baseball is in its, I guess you could say, first full week. The Masters is coming up next week. Stanley Cup playoffs is almost in, I think, 19, 18 days. So we got a lot to cover.
And what I would add to that, Patrick, by the way, shout out the Angels. A little opening split against Houston. Could have been worse, right? Could have been worse. I think if I said, hey, you're playing the Astros, you take a split opening week, you would have said, yeah, sure, I think I would.
I think it was the way that it ended, because they could have easily taken three of the last four. They were up, I believe, 5 or 6-0, and then it just kind of imploded in Angels fashion. But it is good to see that Mike Trout was hitting pretty good the first two games. I think it gave too many Angels fans hope. We were like, stop the count when we were up. We were 2-0 to start the season, and then all of a sudden it kind of went down. The Phillies as well. They're 1-3, can't hit for you know what. So it's both of my – I'm now focused more on hockey. So that's this and U of A basketball and golf. I'm kind of tired of the MLB already.
Well, for Arizona, I mean, it really has been quite the run. Now, I did send the call to our group text, but it's also out there in the open. It's on the Daily Wildcat. It's on my own personal Instagram. The final minute, really, of the broadcast.
The clock comes down from 10. The Wildcats motion to the crowd because they're going to the Final Four for the first time in 25 years. Arizona is moving on. They're going to Indianapolis. A strong second half, a historic season. Win number 36 for Arizona. And they'll keep on marching on in March Madness. What a season it's been, and it's not over yet. Arizona trailed at the half. They trailed for the first time this tournament. But they do not trail at the conclusion of the game. And they will be playing in the Final Four with an opportunity to win their first championship since 1997. Their first time going to the tournament since the legendary Lute Olson coached the team. What a weekend in San Jose. The Wildcats, propelled by Koa Pete, who had 20 points, by Ivan Karchenkov, who had 18, are moving on. And for Tommy Lloyd, in his fifth season, he has the Arizona Wildcats going to the Final Four. And for Arizona, they've got some nets to chop down. Well, that was Arizona Wildcats basketball on Camp Super.
So if you want to hear how it sounded, you know, it can be found not just in the confines of our group chat, but it has really been quite the run. And so we'll see if they can keep it rolling against Michigan. So yeah, there's certainly a lot going into that game. Michigan is a top team. They're a team that should be able to counter Arizona's size as well as anyone. But, you know, Arizona, they've had a historic season. They've won as many games as they've ever won in a single season. And they've also been able to really, I would say, extend and play their best basketball here in the tournament. So this is a really good combination. I think their toughest game will be Michigan. Should they win, it'll get easier. But I'm really looking forward to the matchup between the two.
Yeah, I mean, I'm the same way. I mean, I don't know. Like, I have a good feeling that hopefully U of A can come out with a big win. but you never know. I mean, the Duke game, for example. Duke, all they have to do is just get a easy pass low, and they're going to go to the Final Four. But then a turnover like that and a crazy shot to take the lead and then eventually win the game. I mean, Duke, that is just crazy. The last 2 years, they have been mere seconds away from the national championship game, or even now, I mean, this year, the Final Four. And now all of a sudden, they're going home early. They're done. I mean, what is your take on that, Dave? Because I just was stunned out of my mind. I mean, they were also, wasn't UConn down by 20 as well?
So UConn was down. This is my take on the game. At no point did it look like UConn could win that basketball game. I mean, it just did not seem to be a possibility, right? Mm-hmm. And so I wouldn't say at halftime I thought they could win. With 10 minutes left to go, with 5 minutes left to go when the game started, before the game, I never thought UConn could beat Duke, right? And even with down by two, with 10 seconds left, that's not a position where you win that game, right? Duke is going to take off some clock. Even if they make one free throw, you're talking about up three with a half court shot coming. Probably they make both and the game is over. So that was really something. I mean, that was stunning. And what a collapse. Duke is starting to create this reputation that they can't handle it, you know, down the stretch. This is 2 years in a row where they've had these epic collapses. And I think it's a concern for the university and for the program.
Yeah, I mean, when you're a blue blood program like Duke, and you have all, I mean, I saw this stat a couple of days, I don't know, I think it might have been from TSN or maybe ESPN, where it said all these players that Coach K coached, and I don't know what the new guy's name is at Duke, but they've had a list of current NBA players who have gone on to have great careers or currently having great careers, but they didn't win anything, like nothing. In that span, I think it was from after they won their last title, which it might have been 2010 against Butler, they have not won anything with just a laundry list of players. Now, I have to go back and look at that, but I know Jason Tatum is definitely on that list. There's just a laundry list of players that have gone in the NBA that just have not been able to get it done. So, I mean, same thing with UNC. The UNC is a good program as well, and now they're looking for a new coach. And both of the North Carolina schools, the Carolina schools, are looking for new visions and new kind of direction, essentially. I mean, just shocking exits this season.
Yeah, no question. So what about the other side of the bracket? You've got Illinois there, and they're obviously going to play UConn, but Illinois, I feel like that's a team that they had a solid season. It's not like they've come out of nowhere, but were you surprised to see them one of the last four teams standing?
I mean, as someone who doesn't really follow the Big Ten as much, I'm a little bit surprised, but I think they were generally a sleeper when it came to this tournament. They had a really good run. I mean, they had a few losses that weren't the best, but I think at the same time, they're one of those teams that kind of just fly under the radar and they take care of business, and that's why they are in the Final Four. And I think they've always been good the last couple of years, and I feel like the last couple of years they've had all this pressure of winning, and this year they've kind of had a little bit of more lower expectations in terms of, I don't know if they're going to win this year, but now they have a great path. And I think UConn, I mean who knows, UConn could also do the same thing, come back and win, or, you know, kind of do a little bit of a Cinderella story, a little bit, not Cinderella, but I just think that I could see it's Illinois facing either Arizona or Michigan. I don't really have a lot of confidence in UConn. I think they've kind of had a weird year where they've been up and down in play, and I thought they got really lucky against Duke. So I think Illinois is definitely going to be in the national championship game for Monday. I just don't know if it's going to be Arizona or Michigan. It's going to be really...
Yeah, I think Arizona and Michigan for a lot of the season were the two best teams. Duke was in that conversation for the third, and they have that epic collapse that I think really surprised everyone. Now, yeah, Illinois, they're going to be, I think, the favorite against UConn, but is there a team that's feeling better about themselves than UConn right now? They took down they took down Duke. They also took down Michigan State. They were fortunate they didn't have to play St. John's, because St. John's had their number in the Big East this year. So, yeah, I think I think UConn is going to be a confident team. They won two of the last three championships, so they've got that experience and the, you know, the credential to back it up. And I think that they're going to be a team people should be afraid of. All right, let's transition here just for a few minutes to the Roadrunners, and also just the scale in the world of hockey. So Tucson and San Diego, it's coming down to them, right? But I think the Roadrunners have a little bit more momentum as the playoffs approach. Do you see it the same way?
I think I see it the same way. I mean, you know, San Diego had a little bit of a Canadian road trip, and you know, they did get a win against a very, you know, poor performance in group in Calgary. But I mean, same thing with the Roadrunners. They went up to Canada and to Abbotsford, you know, back in December, and a lot of us, even probably you and I, thought that, oh, this is going to be a sure win for Tucson. And Abbotsford, they play good hockey when they need to. As I talked to James a couple days ago about this, was that maybe their record indicates that they're not making the playoffs and they are now eliminated mathematically from it, but they play when they need to, and they're a hard team to play against. And so, I mean, that's probably what San Diego did. They probably overlooked them very heavily, and that's what happened. So Abbotsford got a huge sweep, you know, not having any points given to San Diego. It was all regulation losses, and which helped Tucson. And I mean, who knows, if Tucson would have at least gotten maybe one more point, maybe an overtime point or all 4 points this past weekend, we could be talking about that Tucson is in a playoff spot and this game is crucial. So, but I think it's going to go down to these last two teams too. I don't see Henderson dropping. I don't see any other teams ahead of Henderson dropping. I mean, Henderson has had just a crazy jump from being in eighth where the Roadrunners are right now to being, I believe, in fourth as I've looked at the standings this morning. So hats off to Henderson, but it is definitely going to come down to San Diego and Tucson.
Yeah, there's no question. And what the Silver Knights have done, I think, has been really impressive. Henderson, they were on the outside for the first half of the season, but everybody knows the most important hockey you play is what you're going to do really after the All-Star break as you gear up for the playoffs, and that's when the Silver Knights have been at their best. And they've removed themselves from the discussion of who's on the bubble. Not the same. The same is not true for San Diego, right? I think the Gulls have really struggled, especially recently. And just, I don't think they've put a lot of confidence into their fan base with the way that they've played here with the playoffs leading up. Where I think the Roadrunners, it's kind of been this roller coaster all season long. I mean, they haven't been, they haven't been dominant over one stretch. But they also haven't had a real skid, I think, where they were in the dumps. It's been up and down, but it's been such short cycles. So we'll see how that works for Tucson, if that's to their advantage, or if they'd rather be a team that's a little bit more streaky, if that would help them win a playoff series. But it's kind of an age old debate.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, I don't know if the Roadrunners have gone on a 5-game win streak. I don't know if San Diego's gone on a 5-game, like, you know, I feel like both of the teams have kind of had similar paths where they started out decently, then kind of had a little bit of a streaky stretch, and then now it's kind of this back and forth thing. I just hope that if Tucson does make the playoffs, or if, you know, the worst case scenario is that if they don't make the playoffs by, let's say, like 1 point or a tiebreaker, I always look back to that New Year's Eve game where the Roadrunners had a 3-0 lead going in the third period, and then lost in overtime. And I always want, you know, you could always be like, oh, we could go back and, you know, if we could erase time. But there's games in the first half of the season that I wonder, could that cause the Roadrunners' fate early that we didn't even know about? So I kind of wonder. And also the tiebreakers do not favor Tucson if we look at the standings right now. So it's going to be close. It's going to be right down the wire. It's probably going to go down to game 72.
No, I think that's a real possibility. And if it does, Tucson's going to be playing Henderson. Will Henderson need the games, right? That could be a really big point. Will Henderson be motivated? Are they going to be essential games for the Silver Knights? And if they are, look, Henderson's playing really well. It's going to be a tough thing for Tucson. Perhaps the Silver Knights are going to be kind of stuck in a spot, and maybe they rest a little bit in preparation for the playoffs, or maybe they're looking to continue to climb. But if Henderson is sitting there at fifth place, Patrick, and they have no way to get to fourth, and they have no way to get to sixth, I think there's a possibility that at least one of those two games, they may rest some of their players and make sure they're healthy for the postseason. Do you see that as a possibility?
I think so too. But if, you know, there's a chance for them to maybe gain a little ground, if someone ahead of them is starting to struggle and kind of lose that third, or, you know, if they're maybe go back a little bit in fifth, maybe they'll just be like, well, we're going to play. We don't care if they need a playoff spot or to win games, we're not going to lay down for anyone. So I think these next couple of games are definitely crucial, but I really am looking to those final, I would say, four-ish games of the season. There's two more games against San Diego at San Diego, which have all the Roadrunners have won, all in San Diego in overtime, in games that the Roadrunners have not played at their best at times. where they had to be able to come back. So hopefully if they can just not be able to share points with San Diego moving forward, then I think Tucson will be able to barely get into the playoffs.
Yeah, I think you're right. Now, let's talk about the players that I think they're going to have to lean on. The Roadrunners are fortunate because they do have, I think, such a healthy leadership structure within their roster. And I don't think it has to be one player, right? I mean, their captain, Austin Pagansky, he's having the best season of his career, and that's a huge deal. But you think about Ben McCartney, right? Cameron Hebig. The list goes on and on for players that could carry the team should they have to. And I think that's a really assuring thing for Tucson as they try to make this surge, right? It's not going to be, well, they need this to happen. If it doesn't, they're out, right? I do think they have options, and there's enough players capable of taking the team on their back this closing stretch and getting them to the finish line. Is there anybody I didn't mention that you also think might be capable of doing that for Tucson?
Well, I think Kevin Rooney is one guy that always sticks out to me, not because of just how many points he puts on during a game. I think he just does the little plays. There's guys who won't be on the score sheet all the time, but they have that experience. I mean, Kevin Rooney has played in the NHL. Scott Perunovic, I mean, he's always on the score sheet. Dmitry Simchev. But these guys who have had a lengthy NHL, I would say, resume and who have been into playoff situations before can guide a lot of these younger guys like Owen Allard and Julian Lutz to, you know, give them some experience and when the times get really tough. So I think Kevin Rooney is one of those guys that always sticks out to me. I always feel like he's always on his game. Maybe he's not scoring all the time, but he's just doing the little things to kind of, I guess, guide the younger players on this Roadrunners team to hopefully, you know, get some more confidence, because I feel like the younger guys have kind of, you know, gotten some more confidence over the last couple of, you know, weeks, I would say, on this little win stretch, I guess, in a way.
When we return on Fox Sports 1450, we'll continue to go in depth on March Madness, what we should expect for Arizona Wildcats and their run if they can make the national championship, plus a little more information about the Tucson Roadrunners. Stay with us on Happy Hour on Fox Sports 1450. Welcome back to Happy Hour on Fox Sports 1450. A little bit of a funny story. So, Patrick, you were in Vegas for a family obligation. I believe it was your grandparents' 80th birthday party. One of your grandparents' 80th birthday, something.
Yeah, so my grandfather turned 80 in January, and then my grandma turned 80 just last Wednesday. So we decided to do like a joint birthday celebration in Las Vegas.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
And so I was covering basketball for Arizona up in San Jose, and my connection flight, because there wasn't a direct flight from San Jose to Tucson, my connection was in Vegas. And what do you know? I'm lobbing around, tired, hadn't slept at all on Sunday morning, no sleep. And I get a call from Patrick. I'm like, this is a little bit random. You know, I'm not sure what he wants here. I know he's away. This couldn't be Roadrunner related unless, you know, I couldn't think of what it was. So I answer anyway, because I'm a good guy. And I'm like, hey, Patrick, what's going on? He goes, I can see you right now, by the way. And I said, oh, you know, as one does when they hear that. I'm like, oh, is that right? Is that so? And I start looking around like an idiot. He's like, you're flying to Tucson from Vegas? And then I said, okay, I see what's going on here. And I found you in the line, and we had a nice little catch up. But what are the odds of that? I mean, that was pretty surprising.
We should have done Happy Hour right there. We should have just done like the next episode on, after hours. That's what it should have been.
Right.
On the plane.
I like yeah, that. A little like
Michael,
happy
Michael
hour
and down
after close.
I think after hours is great. Like a blooper reel for that. That'd be amazing. I mean, I was in the line and I was talking to someone who went to the game. I was like, oh, I'm assuming you went to the game. She was all decked out. I mean, there was I would say like 95% of people that were on that flight came from San Jose. Mm-hmm. And right. I was like, oh, like, how was it? You know, are you going to go to the Final Four? And she goes, yeah, whatever. You know, talking to me about, you know, they're like, that her family made a commitment. Like, if they're going to go far this year, we're going to go same with them. We're going to ride or die. And then I'm like, oh, well, I got to go to my group. I'm in group 3. And I'm like, does that look like that? That's David. I'm like, no, that's just some tall, like, guy. I'm like, no, that's David. So I that's why I called. And I felt bad. I was like, because I think you were on the phone too. I was like, I don't want to like be rude or. I don't know, but were you by yourself or were you with, you know, because do you go with someone for those games? Like, Because I know you went with a group.
I was with a group. Yeah, I was with a group. Okay. But okay. I just left them in the dust because it's Patrick Moore. I mean, what am I going to do?
I mean, I didn't know if I was that, you know, VIP to you.
Oh, my God. I went right in the passing lane, right? I didn't have anybody with me, but I got in the carpool lane nonetheless. I went boom, right by everyone, right to Patrick.
Yeah, I mean, well, so where, how was the flight? Was it, you know, was it bumpy? Was it anything like that? Were you just chilled? Were you just like trying to get some sleep? Like, what do you do on a
plane? I didn't rest.
Yeah. Are you someone that, let's say you're going to New York, you're flying from here to New York or wherever you have to go. Are you someone that like, hey, I want to sleep or I'm going to watch movies? Like what is kind of your routine on a plane?
My routine on a plane, this is a good question. So recently, this is very interesting. Recently, I lost my, so I can't hear out of my right ear basically at all. All right. Mm-hmm. And I lost my left AirPod because I was on a plane coming back from Europe and I fell asleep, which is unusual. I usually can't sleep on a plane at all. I fell asleep and I think my left AirPod came out. I didn't realize till I got off the plane and I was like, oh, this is gone. I looked at my case and, you know, there was nothing there. And so anyway, now I can't hear in my right ear. So my AirPods are effectively obsolete. I have to say, Patrick, it's been a positive because I have a little bit more quiet. I have a little more time to relax. When I'm walking somewhere, it's not just constant noise. So overall, I don't think it's been a bad thing for me. On the plane, suboptimal. You know, on the plane, it's like, come on. Enough. Like, I don't need to make a big statement here. Like, I'd like to listen to something. And, I mean, sorry, I just got to. So that has been, you know, that has been an issue. It's such a short flight from Vegas to Tucson that it was okay. But I was kind of like those old guys who just sit there and do nothing. I mean, I'm going to be honest with you. I didn't have anything downloaded. I didn't have my AirPods. So I just had to sit there and take it for that flight. Such a short flight. I did close my eyes for a little bit. But here, I want to push back on one thing. I tell people, I'm like, hey, I can't sleep on planes. Like, they're like, you can't? What's wrong with you? I think I'm the normal one. Humans only started flying 100 years ago. The thing's as loud as possible, right? I think you're crazy for being able to sleep on a plane. Like, I can't get that vulnerable on an aircraft 30,000 feet above sea level. I'm sorry.
I can't, unless I'm like so tired that I cannot keep my eyes open for the duration of the flight. I cannot. Like, I'm sorry. I did a red eye one time in eighth grade for our Washington, D.C. trip. And we flew from LAX to D.C. on a red eye. And I was in a boot. You know, I partially tore my left Achilles that year. So I was just, you know, whatever. And I just could not fall asleep. Like, there was turbulence. We were going through some, like, rainstorms. We had to, like, maneuver. And there was so much turbulence that, like, I was sleeping like this, you know, with my hands, you know, kind of like playing, like, heads up, seven up. And the plane's turbulence was so, like, hard that I basically, like, got jolted. And I had the little tray up and just smacked my face on the tray so hard that I was like, I can't sleep. And so there was 3 more hours left in the flight. I pretty much just, whatever I had on my phone, I didn't care if it was some, you know, show, like a kid show or whatever. I mean, I was in eighth grade still, but I was like, I watched it. Whatever I had, I was like, I can't do this anymore. I can't sleep. I hated this. I literally could not sleep that whole trip because of that flight. So I agree with you. Unless I'm forced to because of just the duration of the flight, then I'm fine. Then I'm like, no, I'm good. If it, same thing. I can't. I don't know. I don't know how you feel about that, but I just, not to go on a long.
I think it's impressive for anyone who can sleep. I mean, come on. Look, if I'm exhausted, if I'm really exhausted, I will fall asleep just because, I mean, come on, it's like a human reaction. But generally, if I'm trying to get myself to fall asleep, can't make it happen. Yeah, can't make it happen. Yeah. Now, my sister, she'll take medicine. She'll take like melatonin or something. Melatonin, and I call those performance enhancing drugs. I say she takes plain PEDs, and I think it's cheating.
I think so too. I mean, you just, you know, I mean, if you are going on a long flight, like let's say like you went to Europe, that's understandable. Like, that is accepted. That should be accepted. That look, if you want to sleep and you're just like, hey, like I don't want to like tire myself out. I want to be ready to go. Like whatever we do first, that is completely understandable. However, if it's like a 2 hour flight and you have to do that, I'm sorry. That's just like, no, I just don't like that. Now I want to ask you, Dave, a little bit just about baseball since the first, I guess, this is the first full week of baseball starting. We had the opening week starting last Wednesday. What have you seen? What have you noticed? I mean, some pitchers who are like Paul Skenes had a really rough outing. So is there anything that you've noticed? Your Red Sox had a couple of wins. Now, David, I wanted to ask you, since the MLB season has pretty much gotten almost, we're almost to 1 week of the new season. Some interesting kind of performances. Paul Skenes had a really rough outing. The new ABS system has been into full use. So what is your take? I know you've been a very busy world traveler, as they say. So what could, you know, did you have any time to watch anything, or have you just been kind of like reading what's going on social media with the new the season underway for MLB?
So I caught some of the Mets Pirates opening day. That was stunning, wasn't it? I mean, Paul Skenes was awful. He had no command. Mets jumped right on him. I mean, what's going on with him? He struggled in the WBC, and the Mets really got him opening day. You think he's got a little bit of a confidence issue, Patrick?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think I kind of wonder about the WBC. I kind of feel like, you know, some of those players have struggled because of it. Maybe it's just there's a lot of expectations. I mean, Skenes is having a lot of expectations. Is this his like third year in the league? Is that correct?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's right.
Yeah, so, I mean, who knows? I mean, he has, you know, a lot going on. I mean, he has more promotional deals, you know, more stuff he's involved with ads and stuff. And sometimes they kind of distract a player a little bit too much. But
you think so?
I mean, I don't know. I don't follow the Pittsburgh Pirates. I mean, they're kind of irrelevant. I think he's the only thing relevant about the Pirates.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I don't know. I was shocked. I thought he was going to have a good start against the Mets, but the Mets jumped on, and they've been kind of a story. They've been on a good start to start the year. So not like my Angels or Phillies. Well, the Angels had a little bit of hope, but the Phillies, I don't know. I don't know what's going on with them. Not off to a good start. They're having a debut today. One of their young pitchers is debuting for the first time tonight. So he's getting his first start after a very disappointing start to the season. 1-3, the batters. I think they're hitting like 178. They're having a terrible start. They got blown out by the Washington Nationals 13-2 yesterday at home. It has just not been, as a show, it is not always sunny in Philadelphia. That's what I could say about the Philadelphia Phillies. But
The Phillies are off to a cold start. The Red Sox are off to a cold start. They're 1-3. There was a moment I did like from the Red Sox and the Reds series, which was after the conclusion of the game, which was a day game on Saturday. Terry Francona, who's a UA alum, was at his press conference, and somebody said, "Any more questions for manager Francona?" And before they could even answer that, he jumped out of his seat. He goes, "There's a big basketball game on," and he ran out of the press conference to go watch Arizona and Purdue. So I thought that was pretty funny. He's a big-time U of A fan. I mean, he'll show up at the McHale Center often. He's really connected. And I've met him a couple of times, a very good guy.
Seems like a really great guy.
He's one of those guys, you meet him, and he's exactly what you thought he would be when you meet him in person, right?
That's a good thing to know. I've always, as much as the Angels and Red Sox had their rivalry in the mid-2000s, I always remember, oh, my gosh, Terry Francona. He was always a good guy. I mean, U of A alum, and it's always good to see. I did want to ask you about that series, though, because known umpire C.B. Buckner had, I believe, 6 of 8 calls overturned with the ABS system. Do you think that, like, as an umpire, if you felt like, oh, that was a strike and then it's completely off the plate, or maybe you called it a ball and it was right down the heart of the plate, do you think there's kind of some anxiety or maybe embarrassment that you got the call wrong? Or do you feel like, well, you know, sometimes I miss calls and I can't really do anything about it, and it's good that we have this system? So what are your takes?
Well, I think the answer is probably somewhere in between the two of those. I think that, too, I mean, it's a find me a more difficult job than calling balls and strikes at the MLB level. It's very difficult, right? I mean, the ball's coming 100 miles an hour. It's diving. You have to get it right when it crosses the plate. Now, I have sympathy for the umpires for that reason, but I'm a big proponent of the electronic strike zone, and that's the reason why. It's not because I hate umpires or because I hate the tradition of baseball, like people tell me when I argue with them. It's because it's a very difficult job, and it's a job that we no longer need to rely on. And umpires do vary quite a bit, not just from umpire to umpire, but throughout the game, they're not consistent, right? And it's difficult. But if you have something that's really hard and you can be perfect and you choose not to be perfect, I mean, this system is perfect. The robot umpire can't get it wrong. And tennis has already done it with success. And I think the MLB should be using this on every pitch. Have the home plate umpire back there to hold a little thing in his hand and say ball or strike. And they should be calling plays at home plate out or safe. And that's it. I think that they should be calling every ball and strike because it is such a difficult job, but we have the technology to do it perfect. So I think let's do it right.
I just kind of feel like, though, do you think I just worry about the pace. If we're going to rely on everything on the ABS for every pitch, how long that will take? I mean, let's say the Red Sox are playing, I don't know, the Reds. Let's go back to that series real quick. And their every pitch is focused on that whole ABS system, and it's on every pitch. Let's say the Red Sox or the Reds, they have two outs, but their base is loaded. And it continues to be the wrong call. And then the Reds get hot, or the Red Sox. I feel like the pace of play is just going to go down. I think it's trying to continue this, you know, effort by Major League Baseball to continue more faster paced games, where before it was pretty much like 3 hour or 4 hour games. So that's kind of my take, but I do like the system. I think when it comes to the more closer pitches, I think I'm excited to see like what the technology will see. But it is just kind of crazy that like, wow, like, I mean, granted, my uncle umpires D3 NCAA games, or he does like JC and kind of that level. And he says it's really difficult, but he's like, he's learned so much from it. So I that's why like a lot of my friends, they ask me, oh, you should be a ref for hockey, like adult league. And I'm like, no, because I just don't think I would be on top of my game.
You don't want to do that. Look, I don't want to do that. Have you ever seen parents of 10-year-old children screaming at officials? I mean, do you have like younger siblings?
Huh?
Do you have younger siblings?
No, I do not. I have an older sister.
I have a younger sister, and so I've been to my fair share of AAU tournaments and this and that, you know, middle school and even at late elementary school games. And it's embarrassing how much these parents scream at referees and stuff. I think it's a disgrace. I mean, these are people that are working part-time. They're not professional refs, and it's a kid's game. Your kid stinks. This is not good basketball. Like, if they called every foul, every travel, every infraction, the game would take 5 hours. What do you want? I mean, it's pathetic. Yeah. You couldn't pay me to be a ref. I feel bad for them. And at the pro level, what do you want? You want to get threatened? And it's very hard. I mean, I'm good.
I agree on that. As someone who played youth sports as well, and yeah, I mean, like, look, like there were a bunch of refs when I played games that luckily they were more adult refs, so they kind of knew the game. I mean, we had this one young kid one time who like messed up so badly on the call, but like everyone didn't like have a tantrum. It was probably like a couple parents like that. Now granted, the call went our way and it should have not been, and like we were like, hey, look, like you can reverse that call, that was really bad, and like we completely understand. I see all these videos. What really upsets me, David, is I always see these videos of parents at like baseball games, softball games, yelling at the umpire and making their life just a living awful. like yeah, it's horrible. And I've seen stats where, you know, youth soccer leagues are looking for officials and they're having issues finding them because people don't want a ref because they know that they're going to get it. It should be, if when you're a ref, it should be a joy because you're like, hey, like, you know, I have a lot of responsibility, but you know, you don't want to take that joy out of someone who actually enjoys doing it as like a part-time gig. So I think it's a disgrace that some people, you know, they make it about themselves and not about the kids. And it's really hard. And that's what I think the challenges we're having in youth sports right now, as someone who played pretty high levels of youth sports.
Yeah, no question. I think that parents need to take a deep breath. First of all, there's two issues here. I have a lot of problems with parents, you know. The one is kids are traveling too much, Patrick. They're traveling too much. Now, I understand if you play hockey in Arizona, you kind of have to travel because there's not that many rinks. Who are you going to play? But if you play hockey in upstate New York, you don't need to go to Boston or to Connecticut or to North Carolina or to Washington, D.C. to find opponents. I mean, you can drive within an hour and play anybody you want. I think it's ridiculous. These parents are acting like their kids are professionals when their kids are 10 years old. They're spending all this money on the travel teams. They're going to all these different states. They're screaming at the officials. I mean, give it a rest. It's just a game. And I obviously, if I'm saying it's just a game, this is my life. I work in it, and it is still just a game. I mean, it matters, and it can be a beautiful thing. but the parents are extracting the beauty out of sports, okay? In my opinion, some of these parents, they are ruining sports for the children and for everyone. The travel's excessive. It's not necessary. I don't know whose idea it was, who started all this travel play. It needs to stop. That's my take. And we need to stop.
I agree on some. Now, with the higher levels like AAA, you are a part of these leagues that you do have to go to these showcases. So that, and I mean, that is like known. Like, I went to a couple high end tryouts that, you know, didn't make it. But like, at the end of the day, they warn you. You're like, hey, look, like, if you want to make this team, here are the parameters. Like, they warn you, like, hey, you know, so I do not like when people are like, oh, it's so much money. It's like, you were playing it. And sometimes there are people that spend, I mean, hundreds of thousands of dollars to play AAA hockey, and their kid only plays like 10 minutes a game. It's a waste of time. It is a waste of time. Now, I will say, though, there are states like Arizona, Alaska, too. They have a couple of really good AAA teams. They have to go out. There are states that you do. Now, sometimes, like, let me give you an example. The Junior Ducks, the Anaheim Junior Ducks, they play in these NA3HL preparatory leagues where they do go out to showcases. I mean, they're pretty much gone almost every week. However, you're getting national exposure. You're getting scouts as well. The only problem I have is that the parents think, oh, well, my kid's going to make it to the NHL. Half of them probably don't. Half of them are going to play in really crappy junior leagues like the USP, which, not to be mean about the USP, but just like, they're just not getting a lot out of it. And, you know, I agree with you. The parents make it a little bit too much about themselves. When I was ending my youth travel career, it was getting to what it is now, but worse. Like, right. You could see the starting effect where, I mean, I kid you not, one time my dad, this is why my dad always went away from all the parents. He would go in a little corner and watch me play. He wouldn't talk to the parents because all they would talk about, and this is, the season would start in October or maybe September. He'd be like, so who are you going to play for next year? We just got on the team. Who cares?
Yeah.
I mean, now granted, some people, they were ambitious on playing collegiate and higher levels, and that's great. But my dad would be like, why do you care? Like, let them be a kid. You know? That's the aspect.
That is exactly the point. The let them be a kid is over. I mean, people, they're not doing it anymore. And that's a sense. I mean, that is a real, I think it's a real issue. These kids are being treated like they're professional athletes. They're under a lot of pressure. Just let them go out and play. They don't need to go 5 hours to find competition they can find within 30 minutes. And it doesn't need to be as organized as it is. Just let them play. When they get to high school, it's like, okay, if somebody's really good and they're like a sophomore maybe or freshman and they're a star, okay, fine. But until then, until you can't find anybody that can beat you within an hour, you don't need to travel more than an hour.
I just think, and I agree with you 100%, I just think that the letting kids be kids aspect is out the window, which is fine. Like, we all have dreams. I mean, I wanted to play pro, or I wanted to at least play in a higher league, but that just didn't happen for me. And sometimes, and I've noticed there have been kids I've played against or played with that are really, really good players, but they got burned out. And I worry about that these parents put so much pressure on them that they're like they just don't want to do it anymore. They get tired. They almost get sick of it. They almost get kind of like, not a trauma, but just kind of like a bad memory of it because of how much pressure and, you know, just how just exhausting the process was. So as someone, I hope that in the next couple of years, all this hoopla of travel sports and we need to go here, we need to go this. I mean, there are these camps, David, that I would get, you know, my parents would get emails about that would be, you know, it's a money grab. It's all a money grab. So I hope the culture can change around youth sports, but I fear the worst.
The culture needs a desperate change, and it's not going to come. A lot of the times people, oh, they look to the politicians, they blame this, they blame that. Sometimes people just need to get together and realize what we're doing makes no sense. Who created this system? Who created, you're 10 years old, your team is average, and we're going to travel 5 hours all summer. Every weekend we're traveling 5 hours. I mean, it's, whose idea was that? Everyone needs to come together. The parents need to come together and say, no, we're not going. We're not traveling 5 hours. Sorry. Find a different way. Find teams that are in my city, please. Because heaven knows they're out there. It's ridiculous.
There are states, though, that legit don't have anything. They don't have a lot of competition, so they're in those leagues. Now with the prep teams, I've known people that have played at those preparatory schools, like Shattuck St. Mary's, which is a really good. I mean, they just won a couple of national titles throughout the age groups this past weekend at the USA Hockey National Championships. But I'm just like, I just never saw myself doing that. Like, I played a good amount of time. I just played A mostly during youth hockey, and I was happy. My dad literally asked me, he's like, do you want, and I'm like, no, like I tried to make double A and it didn't work out, but I was happy. Like my high school hockey career was the highest level I played. I played the D1 level and I was happy. I literally was happy. I don't care. I just wanted to play for my school and wanted to play with my friends, and that's all I wanted. There's kids that I feel like they don't even get a chance to enjoy that aspect because they're like, well, we need to take you to Des Moines, Iowa this weekend for a really stupid camp that there's going to be no scouts there. They like, it's just, I don't know. It gets me so like sad and upset about, because youth hockey used to be fun and now it's just been created this complete monster that I don't know.
Probably. So you agree with me. I didn't play youth hockey, but it's too serious. I mean, it's being turned into a professional league, and just let the kids enjoy the game. And the other thing about hockey, it's gotten really expensive to play. I mean, it is.
Oh my, that's
so expensive. 100%. It wouldn't be so expensive if they didn't have all this travel. I mean, that's a big part of it.
Yeah,
play within your city if you can. I know in Southern California, Arizona, that might be a little bit different.
Southern California, it's gotten a lot bigger. But like, let's say you play A. So when you play in the A level, the only tournament that you really go out for is there's one tournament you travel out of state. That is it. That is the only. There's no national tournament. The biggest tournament you play is the state tournament if you make it, or the league playoffs. And you'll have maybe a mini tournament. The farthest I ever went for travel in A level was Colorado. That was the farthest I ever went. I didn't have to go to New York. I didn't go to Pennsylvania. It would have been cool, you know, to go, you know, and I've had the fortune to be able to travel with the U of A roller hockey team to, you know, I mean, I've been to Maine. I've been to Florida. I'm going to go to Missouri in, I believe, 2 weeks for the national championship. So I'm going to states, you know, with my friends and with my teammates, and we're able to, you know, I guess, you know, support or represent the University of Arizona, which is a great honor. But I just feel like it's too much pressure. I mean, they don't get a chance to like be a normal kid. And that's what I think is just,
I agree. Yeah. That's my issue too. All right, coming up next on Happy Hour, maybe we'll transition from everything that's wrong with youth sports and we'll get into what's going on with professional sports, including the NHL, the AHL, and more. Stay with us on Happy Hour on Fox Sports 1450. Welcome back to Happy Hour on Fox Sports 1450. The final push here on Tuesday, the final day of March before an exciting April. You've got Final Four in April, the Masters in April, NHL playoffs start, NBA playoffs start, baseball's in full swing, and April is tomorrow. Is that hard to believe, Patrick? Has the year gone by fast or what?
It really has. I mean, I just remember the first time we did this podcast, and now we're just doing a podcast in general with the Roadrunners, and now it's like, oh, wow, there's only, what, the Roadrunners, I think, have, what, 7 games left, 8 games left? Who knows?
Something like that.
It's just...
So Tucson, in their push to make the playoffs, they get a huge win on Saturday, 4-2 against the Ontario Reign. You want to talk about a big win. San Diego not performing well, Tucson with a chance to chase them down, but the Roadrunners playing against a very good top of the division Ontario Reign team had taken a really frustrating tight loss on Friday by the score of 3-2, a game that was really tight the whole way. Tucson led in the second, tied after two. Chromiak finishes them off in the third. They lose 3-2. The Roadrunners come back on Saturday and they pick up a much needed 4-2 victory. And like I said, this is a team that is not deficient of team leaders, and it was their leaders who really came through. Cameron Hebig scored his 20th goal of the season. Andrew Agazino had two, and he's actually chasing down Hebig and others as one of the leading goal scorers for the Roadrunners this season. Agazino now has 18 goals on the year after his two-goal performance, and Julian Lutz threw in a big one, his fifth of the season in the second period. All in all, Tucson gets a 4-2 win that they desperately needed, and they are right there for that 7th spot in the AHL Pacific Division standings. Right there.
They are right there. I mean, I do want to shout out Cameron Hebig. He tied the record for most points all in franchise history. So that is also a big kind of accomplishment that happened over the weekend. So just to shout him out. I mean, it's right there. I think we've hit the nail with the hammer pretty much all podcasts when we talked about it. I mean, it's right there. They control their destiny. That's all I'm going to say. They can literally control their destiny. And if they're able just to get a good push and win the remaining couple of games and have a couple here near here misses, they'll be fine. That it's all in their hands. They control their destiny.
Yes, no question about that. So let's just give everyone a really quick refresher where the Tucson Roadrunners stand. I told you they're close, right? But what does close actually mean? Because you talk to one person, Patrick, and they say, oh, I'm close with this person. Meanwhile, they haven't talked to him in 5 years. Another person will say, oh, we're not that close. And they work together and see each other 40 hours a week. So close is a subjective term. Here, I think I'm using it appropriately. The Roadrunners are 1 point behind San Diego, and they have a game in hand. So if that's not close, I don't know what is. I mean, they are right on top of each other. Henderson is 7 points ahead of San Diego. So I really don't think there's anything. You're not going to catch Henderson, right? It is Tucson. It's San Diego for spots number 7 and 8. If you're in 8th, you're out. If you're in 7th, you're in. Abbotsford and Calgary, they're eliminated. See you next year. So it's 2 for 1. It's that simple. And they're as close as you can be.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, one of those things. Just looking at the standings right now, I mean, they are both tied. The magic number is 18 for both of those teams. There's no chance of them clinching the division or the conference. But at the same time, the Roadrunners tiebreakers are the only concerning thing if it does come down to game 72. And if they are tied, San Diego would win that tiebreaker immediately. The only thing that's positive though right now is just the form of play. You know, in soccer, when there's, you know, the run of form. I think the Roadrunners are having a really good run of form right now, and San Diego is falling. Now, I do want to mention that the Roadrunners play San Diego on Wednesday, and then an all-important series where they are at Henderson, which I'm going to say this right now, these next 3 games are do or die. I know the rest of the games right now are do or die, but I feel like this will decide the remaining thing. I think this is what's going to happen. I think it's going to decide the season, these next 3 games. And if they can't pick up any points, they're in sheer trouble.
So it's funny you say that, because I think every game left and all their games remaining are going to be in the month of April. I believe they play 9 games in April, 9 or 10.
And 9 games. They have 9 games left.
9 games. Yep. 9 games to be played in the month of April. They're all huge. They've got 4 with the Silver Knights and they've got 2 with Colorado, right? Colorado is a very good team, so those are going to be 2 tough games, and Colorado's battling to be in that top spot. The 4 with Henderson are difficult because Henderson's playing as well as anybody right now. They're very hot. San Diego, 2 games left. Those are your playoff games. Those are your playoff games because not only is it an opportunity to move up, it's an opportunity to knock San Diego down. The first one is on Wednesday. That should have the intensity, the feel, the atmosphere of a playoff game for both sides. There should be desperation and physicality because these 2 teams are playing for their life. So they're all big games. They're all huge. 9 games left. They're on the bubble. The 2 against San Diego, Patrick, as big as it gets.
I agree. I can agree. I mean, the playoffs started today pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
March 31st. I mean, they've pretty much been going on. I feel like when March hits, the playoffs start for the teams that are left that haven't clinched yet.
Yeah.
These are going to be huge. Playoffs. Yes, this is like this is the first 4. This is the first 4.
We'll have coverage starting at 6:45 tomorrow Arizona time for what we just said as a playoff game between the Tucson Roadrunners and the San Diego Gulls on Fox Sports 1450. For Patrick Moore, our terrific producer Michael Goodrich, this is David Meridian saying so long. We'll see you next Tuesday for Happy Hour on Fox Sports 1450.